Welcome to The Doctor Is Out, a podcast hosted by Dr. Sharif Akili, resident physician at Stanford Hospital and investor at Polaris Partners. Join Sharif in exploring the extraclinical practice of medicine as he interviews healthcare leaders who have gone from bedside to build companies, run health systems, spearhead public policy, and pursue many other paths where they lend their unique bedside perspectives.
Our guest today is the president of Verily Health Platforms, Dr. Vivian Lee. I am so honored to be with my guest today, Dr. Vivian Lee, who is perhaps one of the most brilliant minds in healthcare. Vivian, thank you so much for joining us. You are the president of Verily Health Platforms, and for those who don't know, Verily, which used to be called Google Life Sciences, is Alphabet's life science group that works on a variety of incredibly cutting-edge projects that, at first glance, do seem like moonshots, but they end up being transformative in really concrete ways. A good example, which I prescribe right now in my clinic, is the continuous glucose monitor Verily developed with Dexcom. It's basically this patch that patients with diabetes wear that tells you what your blood sugar is at any given moment in time without having to prick yourself over and over again. And it's absolutely incredible. You'd think it'd be something out of a sci-fi book, but these are the types of projects you guys work on. And you also work on big problems in health system improvement and population health, which I believe is the area where you spearhead, Vivian. And that's not surprising given your background. Before your time at Verily, you were the CEO of the University of Utah Health, where during your tenure, you were able to get the health system to be ranked first in the nation in quality and safety. But honestly, I think my favorite thing that you did recently is write this book, The Long Fix, Solving America's Health Crisis and Strategies That Work for Everyone. Now, I am biased in terms of my own interests, but this is seriously one of my favorite books of all time. I could not recommend it more highly to anyone inside or outside of medicine who really wants to just understand in an accessible way why this craziness and bizarreness exists in our health system in the United States. And you provide an excellent diagnosis of the problems in this book, but you also provide a clear set of concrete solutions to fix it, tailored to different audiences. I almost wish it was like required reading in my med school or something, because it just really effectively and accessibly condenses everything I've learned in business school about healthcare into one book. Anyway, I could probably spend all day talking to you about this book and the stuff in this book, but we're here to talk about you. So thank you so much for joining me today, Vivian.
Oh, thank you so much. And that was so kind of you. So really appreciate it.
Of course. My first question for you, Vivian, and feel free to answer it however you like, is what does Verily Health Platforms do and why did you take your job there?
Well, I joined Verily about 2.5 years ago, and I've had, as you mentioned, a long career in academic medicine. So I've been in universities and in university teaching systems for my whole career. And after 6 years leading the University of Utah, I had a year sabbatical. And it was actually during the sabbatical that I wrote The Long Fix and really, you know, thought pretty hard about how our healthcare system is broken, and, you know, really went around the country trying to study solutions. We had done a lot of really interesting work at the University of Utah. So many other places have been doing really innovative things. And so I wanted to share their stories too. And I was just getting ready to take another position, actually leading another healthcare system. I was really excited about it. I'd already called up some of my friends to see if they wanted to come and join me in this new place, in this new role. And then the folks at Verily called me again. So I didn't really think of myself as a technology person. I mean, and just to give you a sense of it, when I showed up to my interviews there, I was still carrying my old BlackBerry. So, you know, museum piece for most, but for me, it was something that was really hard to let go of. So it just gives you a sense of the lack of fit in many ways, at least in my own mind. But what persuaded me to take another look and then to actually take the job was this idea that so many of the solutions that I write about in the Long Fix are locally derived solutions. And the real challenge is, how do we scale them? How do we get those solutions to everyone across the country and even across the world? And one of the things that technology has really figured out is scale. And they figured out scale, but in a personalized kind of way. You know, so we each have very similar phones, to be honest with you. Like, these technologies are not really that different anymore. And yet we use them in such personalized ways, and we're engaged in them, and they actually change our behaviors. And so all of those capabilities, I thought, boy, you know, if we really could match those up to some of the challenges that we're facing in healthcare, we really could make a difference. And that's kind of how I landed in Verily. And as you said, we are the part of Alphabet that was purpose-built for life sciences and healthcare, and really pretty low-key company, sort of deliberately low-key, I think. But for the part that I'm responsible for in health platforms, we've really focused on really three main areas, which I think are maybe the core essential components of healthcare. There's the patient piece, patient individuals. How do we enable people through digital health, digital technologies, virtual care to really advance and engage in their own health? And then how do we provide tools, secondly, to health systems, people like you who are going to be practicing in, you know, in hospitals and health systems and medical groups, how do we give them tools in order to deliver better value? How do you know whether you are providing high value healthcare, great, whether your patients have had great outcomes and at the lowest possible costs? Those are very important tools that I think are missing. And then thirdly, how do we help payers? Payers are, you know, sort of unique to the healthcare ecosystem. The fact that we have three kind of players in this scene, but they're essential. So they need the same information in order to be able to serve as effective purchasers of healthcare, really drive the market in ways that are necessary to improve outcomes and reduce the cost for everybody that they're responsible for. So our health platforms are pretty diverse, really, really interesting, and leverage kind of a combination of a lot of big data and analytics, also a lot of hardware sensors like the Dexcom continuous glucose monitor. You know, there's new technologies that can help us monitor health better. And then there's this magic sort of secret sauce piece, which I think of as the tech's ability to understand human behavior, engage people and what matters to them, you know, that kind of piece, which I think generally we're missing a lot in healthcare. So those are some of the things that we're working on, how we think about it.
That is so cool. I think you probably have one of the most unique, interesting jobs in the country. Do you feel like a little bit of your job is to be given these incredible resources and just take them and run and just solve problems? Does Verily Health Platforms have a certain profit incentive or strategic incentive? Or is your job just to work on these big problems in any way possible? How have you been thinking about how to, like, not these enormous challenges?
That's a really insightful question, actually, because I think that let me just start by saying, I think that our company is really remarkably mission driven. So we have this, we're in a really sweet spot of being a startup. So Verily started about 5 years ago. We just celebrated our fifth year anniversary. Health platforms, we started 2.5 years ago. And so we're definitely a startup. You know, when I started, I didn't have a single FTE, you know, when I started. And so we've grown over the years. We have that kind of very agile mentality. And at the same time, we're a part of Verily, which is a more mature company, which is a part of Alphabet, which, of course, is a very, very mature company with a lot of resources. And so we have the luxury of being, I think, very mission-driven as a startup. But on the other hand, I think we are a for-profit business. So I think what's very interesting about, especially starting in the U.S. market, is this basic belief that we can do good and do well. Like, there is our system, as you know very well, being a student of it yourself, is broken on the side of, it's not that we don't have enough money for healthcare, it's that we're spending way too much money in healthcare and not getting the return that we really should be getting, not getting the better health that we should. And so by building the right kinds of tools, I think we should be able to achieve better health outcomes, enable people to lower the cost of care, lower the overall cost of care for everyone so that we can increase access, better access to care for more people. And in doing so, our business model is really to share in some of that savings. So we can kind of create more of a win-win and more of an alignment between what we want to achieve and what everyone else wants to achieve, which is better health and lower costs. So I think we can do both. I think we can really achieve the mission that we're setting out for ourselves, as well as create a very successful business. And you know, part of the way the U.S. healthcare system works is we are more private sector driven than in many other countries. And so if we can successfully create a business model that others can also adapt and share, then that will drive, you know, overall healthcare to a better place.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that there's sometimes cynicism about whether the U.S. healthcare system can be disrupted. We have an incredible gem, which is our startup ecosystem, and how much value that's created over the last, you know, 20 years, especially out of Silicon Valley. And it's changed so much about how we do things, but it feels like that has been lagging in healthcare.
Let me give you an example. Okay. So for example, we have one of the businesses that we manage is called OnDuo. It's a joint venture between Verily and Sanofi. And it started really in managing people with type 2 diabetes. And now we've extended to other chronic conditions. And so in that model, it's a digital health solution. There's the continuous glucose monitor that we talked about. There's the app, and people really engage in it. You can take pictures of your meals and snacks. It lets you, if you have the continuous glucose monitor, you can sort of track your blood sugars 24/7 and then make that visual association between what you ate or how you exercise or how you slept, you know, and how your blood sugars are changing. It's like, it's really, really, I think, really powerful. And then there's the telehealth. You can, text with a coach. You can video conference with a physician, for example. It's kind of got what you would expect and a little bit more, I hope, in a digital solution. In addition to that, you know, what we were trying to do is think about, well, how can we not only be disruptive in the way in which we're offering care, but also in the business model? To the point that you're sort of raising, right?
Yeah.
Is it so entrenched? You know, should we be cynical or should we think about disruption? And so what we said was, well, you know, we really believe that we should be paying for better health outcomes, and therefore we should be paid, you know, as a delivery system for better health outcomes. And so we began contracting last year with those who were willing and interested in doing this to say, okay, we will go 100% at risk. Only pay us when we are able to actually reduce HbA1cs, you know, when we can actually show that we've improved a person with diabetes' blood sugar control, for example. And maybe in addition to that, you want us to make sure that we have them undergo their eye exams and their kidney checkups and the other things that they have to make sure, you know, are working in good order. And it's almost like a money back guarantee or a, you know, taking 100% risk for that. And we started to offer those because we said, well, you know, if we're champions of value, then we need to walk the walk. And we hope that by doing this ourselves, that we will actually drive the whole market in this direction. Right. Absolutely. Everyone else who's fee for service, you know, pay me every time you click on this button or pay me every time you video conference or text my coach or whatever, you know, now they're going to be forced to think, oh, you know, there's a disruptive model now in this ecosystem. How can we respond to that? Maybe we also need to go into the value model. So that's kind of how we're thinking about it. That gives you one example.
Yeah. And I'm so happy you're spearheading that because I could not imagine a more appropriate person who philosophically, but other also in terms of expertise, can help usher that. On a similar topic, what are your thoughts then about the role of government and the role of policy and how the healthcare ecosystem should be set up to allow for these types of solutions to thrive from the private markets? What are your thoughts? I don't know, earlier in our podcast, we had Sachin Jain and Rishika Fernandopoul sort of hint that they wish that we sort of had maybe a Medicare Advantage for All-esque single payer system that might be a solution towards fixing some of our challenges in the healthcare policy space. Do you have a sense on this? I try to humble myself. I feel like this is always a tricky topic to navigate.
This definitely falls into the category of much easier to write on a slide than to actually see it delivered and executed, you know? Like, how do we fix the overall payment system for this country, you know? But it's definitely worth talking about because I think that there is a lot of appetite for change now, especially with COVID. I mean, if there is a silver lining at all to COVID, it is that it is creating an appetite for change that I think none of us would have expected. You know, I called the book The Long Fix, and now I'm kind of hoping with COVID, it'll be a little bit less long. It'll be a little bit quicker fix. So it's worth having these discussions, you know, because I think we will see a lot of change going forward. And the more we have a shared idea of where that change could be taking place, the better. I think that as you know from reading my book, I am a big fan of a lot of the work that's been happening in Medicare Advantage. And actually, I feature Rishika and Iora Health quite a lot. And Sachin Jain I'm like a huge fan. He's amazing. So and maybe what I'll just say, I'm sure many of your listeners will already know, but just for those who need a quick refresher, the reason why many of us are so enthusiastic about Medicare Advantage is that traditionally with Medicare, which is of course the largest payer in the country, it's really been mostly a fee-for-service model. So even though it's government run, it is still just, you know, it's reimbursing doctors for every time they see a patient, for example, in clinic. So it leads to, unfortunately, still a lot of the problems that we have in our healthcare system in the US, even though it is a government-run program. And so Medicare Advantage, which started in, you know, a pilot form, I don't know, more than a couple of decades ago, now has grown to almost 40%, I think, of the Medicare population now is in a Medicare Advantage program, is a different model where the government will pay medical groups a fixed amount of money. It's kind of a capitated model to care for seniors who join their practice, commit to their practice for the next year. And they're held to some quality standards as well. And so as a result, these physicians have developed very innovative models. Both of your former guests have been very important contributors to that innovation in terms of how physicians should be spending their time keeping seniors healthy and out of the hospital. And what they've discovered is that an investment in prevention, in primary care, spending more time with patients, being a much more proactive, not waiting until somebody's already declined, you know, a lot of it is kind of common sense, but we just never thought about it that way in the old fee-for-service model. And what they've seen and they've published now pretty consistently is better health outcomes, greater investment in primary care, less spending on hospitalizations. And so I feel that this direction is actually very important, not only for Medicare, but for all payers. And I also think that it's clear with Medicare, the administrative cost of care go down. We already know that compared to in the private sector.
Do you think we should have a single payer system or a public option? Or
yeah, so that's really...
It does not matter so
much.
Yeah,
I think that's a really...
Is that the wrong question?
I think it's more important to get right what we're paying for. So really honing the Medicare Advantage model to be one that is scalable and sustainable is really important to get right. There are some challenges when we get into this global or capitated world of risk adjustment. And getting that done right. Right now, Medicare Advantage has been funded in a way that's been a little bit probably more generous than it could be if it were really delivered at scale. And that has been deliberate, you know, in order to kind of incentivize people to move into that model. So I think if we were able to, I guess what I would imagine first is moving towards a Medicare Advantage type model for everyone, whether it's administered by the government or administered by the private sector, because I think that the actual challenges of moving everything fully under the government politically in this country, very difficult. What I would want to definitely double down on, though, is the idea that the Medicare Advantage model is one that everyone should be embracing, regardless of who is paying. And then if we can, and that's Medicare, that's Medicaid. And if we can get the private sector to embrace that, transition eventually potentially over to the government, just depending on the political winds, headwinds there. I think that could be a great future, but to get the order right is really important, I think.
That makes sense. Maybe we should be shifting the conversation here, putting the spotlight here. Another question about something recently in the news. So just yesterday, it was announced that Haven's shutting down, which for those who may not know, was the partnership between JP Morgan, Berkshire Hathaway, and Amazon to try to use their employee healthcare population to do something innovative that got a lot of excitement in the news. It was originally run by Atul Gawande. Do you feel like there are any interesting learnings from Haven? Anything that you've found interesting that you're applying in your own practice or work at Verily?
You know, I have a lot of respect for Atul. I've known him for more than 30 years. He's a wonderful human being. I probably don't know enough about it to comment specifically on the decisions made for Haven. But what I do know is that it's the problem that they're trying to address is actually related to our previous discussion, the fact that half of all Americans receive their health care through their employment, and the challenges of having employers who may be car manufacturers or bookstore owners or restaurant deli managers, you know, having them be responsible for healthcare and healthcare payments and adjudicating claims, you know, that's obviously not their forte. So how...
I don't think doctors are good at
that. You're right. Even physicians, you wouldn't want us in charge of that. So so how to really address that is still a really, really pressing need. And it's actually been something that is one of the main areas of focus for us at Verily and in the health platforms, is really how do we build the tools to support employers. Right now, you know, we talked a little bit about Onduo and these digital health solutions, which are really, really very much focused on employers as well as Medicare. But in the last year, it's been COVID. You know, how do we really help employers as well as universities get their employees back to work? You know, there's been a focus on the health of employees like we've never seen before, right? And so it's a really, I think the needs that Haven was trying to address and the needs that frankly we're trying to address in Verily have not gone away. If anything, they've gotten even stronger. And I'm sure there'll be many business schools that'll be doing the post-game analysis of what actually happened there, but it's not because the need has gone away, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's really insightful. Forgive me, I wish I spent more time on this point, but I'm going to pivot just because they're so interesting, all the other topics we're delving into. Vivian, I'd love to learn a little bit more about how you ended up where you are right now. You've had such a cool pathway through, you know, I think you were the CSO at NYU, Dean of School of Medicine at University of Utah, the CEO there, now at Verily. How did you end up in healthcare administration? Did you foresee that? I mean, your training, you have a PhD in medical engineering from Oxford, an MD from Harvard, and you're a trained radiologist. Did you foresee this pathway? And would you have any advice to anybody who might be listening, who's wonders how people sort of find these impactful pathways that may not seem like they necessarily, you know, fit a particular mold? Mm-hmm.
So the short answer is no, I had no idea that I about anything. So I started out I wasn't even sure what kind of doctor I wanted to be when I was in medical school. The one thing I knew I wasn't going to be was a surgeon. And so that's why I chose my rotation at the West Roxbury VA, because I could get parking and because nobody who was gunning for a surgery spot would choose the VA because there were no attendings there. And then I fell in love with surgery. And so I actually matched in surgery at Duke. Mm-hmm. I have many stories I can tell you about that. It was amazing, amazing experience. I loved surgery. It was before duty hours. So we were doing about 100 hours a week. You know, it was pretty intense back then. I loved it. My only claim to fame, I'll tell you, as a surgical intern, I would say I was probably okay. You know, like I wasn't the worst intern, but my claim to fame was I was the only intern to stay awake through every grand rounds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. See, there, I was into it. I was really, really into it. I loved it.
I should have been a single right there.
But I had done a PhD in engineering before I went to medical school, and I knew I loved engineering. I knew I wanted to do research, and I even wrote a few papers actually when I was an intern, which are kind of a blur now. But I just thought, you know, I wanted to do research. I wanted to have a family, and I looked at the hours that everyone was working, and I said, as much as I love this, it's probably not the only thing I can do. And I ended up in radiology after that, which was not exactly a perfect personality fit for me, to be honest with you, but a very insightful program director recognized that he knew I had an engineering background, and he directed me to MRI, which actually turned out to be a great fit, actually, at least, you know, from a scientific perspective. So advice, you know, the advice that I often give people is to live in the moment and to get everything out of the experiences that you're getting, you know, whatever you're getting exposed to, just throw yourself into it. You know, if you're, you know, I did one of these interviews for the New York Times. There's a series called The Corner Office, and they interview all these CEO type people. It used to come out like once a week. And I remember when I did the interview, the guy who interviewed me, I said this sort of idea, and he said, "Oh yeah, the guy before you just said the exact same thing. He's the CEO of some huge company." And he said one of the most meaningful experiences that he had was when he was in high school working at a McDonald's, because at that McDonald's, he could see how a company standardized operations to such a state of perfection that anybody, regardless of their education, pretty much regardless of, you know, their training, could make a perfect French fry. You know, and if you know, if you have that skill set, you can really expand that to a lot of other things. And I've sort of found that during my career, like things that I committees that I served on, or projects that I was responsible for, or, you know, various research things that I did along the way, those experiences and the lessons that I learned from those, some of them are positive lessons, some of them are negative lessons, you know. Whatever those lessons are, have really served me well in ways that are very unexpected. And so I often meet people who I feel like their eyes are so much on the horizon that they miss what's right in front of them, you know, which is the experiences that they're in. And maybe they underplay them, like, well, I'm only, you know, I have to serve on this whatever review committee. And I'm like, just throw yourself into it, because you're gonna learn and you're gonna get a lot of out of it. And also, frankly, I think when you live that way, people can see that you're passionate about what you do, and that's what makes them tap you for other things, you know. So you get pulled into more things that that, you know, just creates opportunities for you as well. So it's not really particularly specific career advice, but
I think
anyway, it
that's
served
very
me well.
valuable. It's like a, you know, a little bit of a North Star that can be useful, especially in medicine, where it's such a freight train you get on and you don't get off for like 15, 20 years or something,
Well,
you know.
that's one thing, you know, when I was at the University of Utah and I was the dean of the medical school, I would tell students and the residents that I spoke with, you know, when you get a chance to throw yourself into a project, like a lot of, I was actually really thrilled that so many more students and residents now than back in my day are actually interested in health services research and quality and improving delivery system, you know, all the kinds of things that that we've been talking about, because every health system in the country, academic or otherwise, has to do this work, right? Everybody has to transform itself in order for our healthcare system to change. And so you, as a student or as a resident or as a fellow, if you have the chance to get involved in a project, no matter what it is, I mean, let's say you care a lot about women's health, but this is a mental health project. Doesn't matter. Throw yourself into that and learn something about it, because wherever you go, if you show an appetite for getting involved in leading change in improving our healthcare delivery system, you're going to be really attractive to the leadership, because they need that capability, they need that talent, and you can start building up your skills at all, you know, at every stage of your career.
Amazing. Well, for my very last question, I wanted to end the episode with a segment actually requested by a listener called Picks, where we just have our guests recommend something they enjoyed recently. It could be a book, an article, a TV show, song, movie, another podcast, whatever. Is there anything you came across recently that you found compelling or interesting that you might recommend?
You know, I read a lot, and so what I usually recommend is whatever I've been reading most recently.
That's fine too.
So I've been reading a lot about, the book, I guess, that I would recommend right now, so don't think too deeply about it because it's just a book that I finished recently, is Team of Rivals. It's about Lincoln. Huh. And I had the book for a long time and I just picked it up recently because I was thinking a lot this summer about Black Lives Matters and what, you know, the state of civil rights in this country. And but also I think I'm a big fan of leadership books. And I think everybody has different leadership styles. And so the more you can understand how people have navigated very difficult times, the better. It's an excellent book.
Super. Well, thank you so much, Vivian. I cannot stress enough how fortunate I am to have a chance to have this chat with you. Really appreciate your time. That does it for this episode of The Doctor Is Out. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support us, please leave a review on Apple Podcast or whichever podcast platform you use. And if there's something you found you really liked, or didn't like, or would like to make a suggestion, feel free to reach out by email at info@tdio.org.